Hi all, and welcome to this session where we talk about digital market environment from the perspective of technological development. The learning goals for the session are the following. So the first of all, I would like you to be able to identify the key advances in technological development and their implications for digital marketing. And then secondly, to understand the role of artificial intelligence and machine learning in marketing use cases. So we'll put a lot of emphasis on AI and recent developments. This is where I position the session to the course framework. So, as mentioned earlier in the course, this is the course framework and the outer ring of the left-hand figure. Is the market environment, and it depicts the key drivers of changes in the market environment, especially in the digital market environment. So there is technological development, changes in customer behavior, and changes in the field of competition. And in this session, we focus on the technological development. Why does digitalization transform marketing? So let's start from this basic question. And in a nutshell, we can perceive that the technological development is the fundamental driver of changes in the market environment and the sort of issue that fundamentally requires changes from the marketing. So new technological innovations, applications, tools, software, and so on emerge at an increasing pace in this rapidly moving world, which makes changes to customer and competitor behavior, and ultimately, marketing must change. So, you can think this in two different ways. First of all, the technological development creates new challenges for the companies as the customers change. So new needs are identified by the customers and they also shape their customer behavior. And hence, marketers need to adapt to those changes to address the focal consumer needs. And then on the other hand, you can perceive that technological development offers new opportunities for companies to use these technologies in ways that create more value for the customers. So you can become more relevant or come up with something new, innovative things that address customer needs better. In some cases, you can even shape customer needs and behaviors. But it's important to understand that this opportunity is not only available for your company, but it's also available for all the companies, all the competitors, and all competitors think how to make the most of these new technological developments to address customer needs in best ways possible to perform well in their businesses. So it's kind of like an opportunity and challenge at the same time. Here are some of the radical marketing technologies, and especially in this slide, I talk about the front-end technologies. And by front-end technologies, I mean those technologies that are clearly visible for the consumers and accessible by consumers. So customers can actually see and use these technological innovations. And we could go very far back in the future, but sorry, in the history, but I'll start with the emergence of the World Wide Web. So, in the around 80s to 90s, the graphical web browsers emerged, the World Wide Web emerged, and it allowed customers to access internet and all its content globally, which was obviously a very radical thing. Before that, internet was a little bit difficult to use, but these browsers made it easily accessible by any consumer. All you had to do was to know certain URL addresses for websites, and then you were able to access them. In the beginning, the internet was not considered a commercial marketplace. It was more like a digital library or something equivalent for encyclopedia. So in the old days, whenever you didn't know something or you needed some information, people often relied on encyclopedia and read them. And now this digital library allowed anyone to just access internet and find information. But you had to know the URL addresses of these websites, or then you were able to use these websites that were sort of portals that listed different types of websites for different categories. But as the a number of these websites started to increase rapidly, it was often quite difficult to find the most relevant source of information. And for this purpose, search engines emerged, and they allowed consumers and users to find relevant information about, frankly, anything. So just by typing in some keywords, these search engines were able to return the most relevant websites that match your query. And Google was not the first search engine, so it wasn't the real innovator, but they came up with probably the best ranking system. So it has become the most dominant search engine, especially in Finland and in Western Hemisphere. The e-commerce then emerged right about the same time when search engines emerged, and it actually transitioned the internet into a commercial stage. So consumers were able to start buying goods from companies via the internet. This opportunity was available for B2B companies, so business to business companies, much earlier. So they used something called extranet system to trade goods. But in the 90s, also consumers started to be able to trade goods and services via the internet, which was definitely a radical moment in the history of the internet. In the beginning of this millennium, mobile and smart devices emerged that allowed consumers to access internet anywhere, anytime, as long as you had internet access. So after that, you were able to, for example, be in a physical store, but at the same time, you were able to find information about the products via online or maybe compare prices and these types of things. So it started the discussion of multi-channel and especially omni-channel world, where companies really had to think how their online presence and offline presence come together. So it was a lot about the fusion of the offline and online. This was at least one of the key implications for the marketers. Social media at around 2005 to 2010 started to pick up a lot of traction, and it has radically changed the communications landscape in the internet. It created this interactive feature to the internet and allowed customers to communicate with each other. It also allowed consumers to be content creators. So you started to be able to share content, information, opinions, experiences, ratings of different products, and so on. So it definitely allowed consumers to actually talk with each other, and also from the company's perspective, it was quite radical because you started to see an increasing amount of reviews of companies and products and services. So it became more and more difficult for companies to do business with bad products or services or customer experiences. More recently, AR or augmented reality, VR or virtual reality, and then even more recently, the metaverse have become terms to describe the fusion between the digital and the physical world. So, especially I would say the AR is a pretty good example of the fusion between digital and physical. So you can be in the physical world, but at the same time, you can perceive some digital objects around you. So it is pretty radical when you think about it that you can be at the same time in the digital and the physical world. So you can see things that are partly real and partly imaginary or artificial, created by digital environment. VR mainly has become famous in the gaming environment, but there are also a lot of industry applications. But the idea is that you can actually get into the internet, so you don't, use internet from the outside, but you actually immerse yourself in the internet, so you can be part of the internet and you can move around there, and it is this fully digital environment. And now it's a little bit elusive what's the difference between VR and metaverse, but now more recently, at least, the metaverse discussion has been a lot about simulating many physical environment situations in the digital environment. So you can do things that are similar to what you could do in the physical environment. So in the metaverse, part of the metaverse can be fully imaginative, but at the same time, you can interact with your friends, you can have these discussions, you can go shopping together, or at least that's the idea. You can participate in concerts together. So it kind of has created this more physical environment like virtual world. In 2022, if I remember correct, there was this big ChatGPT moment that started this AI agent era. Although there have been AI agents earlier, but it was definitely ChatGPT that radically introduced the idea of human-machine interaction. So we can actually not just use the machines, but we can actually have conversations with the machines, and they can help us in multiple tasks like finding information or creating content or helping us to understand things that we don't fully understand. So it is definitely a multi-purpose environment, but I think the key underlying issue is this ability to actually talk with computers that have unlimited amount of data inserted in them, and we can use or make use of all that information. Now, those were the front-end technologies, but it is important to understand that it's not just these front-end technologies that are revolutionary, but also the back-end technologies. So the back-end technologies are technologies that are not usually directly observable for the consumers, but they might be very important technologies for the marketers to make efficient marketing decisions. Customer relationship management software or CRM software emerged or became popular at around 90s. So the idea was that you can store all customer related data into one repository, a data repository, and it allows marketers to, for example, do things like customer segmentation, analyzing customers' purchasing patterns, so what kind of products they buy, what kind of customer groups they have. It can be used for targeting and things like that. So it's still probably the most important technology, marketing technology in many companies. Web analytics, early in this millennium, gave us eyes to monitor how consumers use our websites and mobile applications and web services in general. So they allow you to track how customers navigate, for example, on your website, or what pages do they visit, or how much time do they spend in different pages, what kind of content they are interested in, how do they interact with the website, what are the resulting outcomes, and so on. So you can say that it gave eyes for seeing how customers actually use your websites and web services. And if web analytics gave us eyes to monitor the web services or websites, then the Internet of Things gave us eyes for monitoring how customers use physical products. So it uses this type of sensor technology, so which allows the physical products to be connected to the internet. And via this technology, the companies can track how do you use many of these physical products, which kind of features do you use, and how often do you use different features? What kind of error messages are associated with consumer usage of these devices? And all of this is very important input for especially the product development, and perhaps educating customers how to make the most of the devices that they have bought. Marketing automation at around 2015 started to become very popular tool, and it was about automating repetitive tasks performed by marketers. So we realized that we can actually use these machines to do things for us. We don't always have to manually do everything ourselves, but actually we can let the computers do some of that work with rules specified by the marketers or the users of the software. So typical examples could be, for example, that when you make an e-commerce purchase, you get a purchase confirmation to your email, and you have probably guessed that nobody actually sent it to you. I mean, no human being sent it to you, but it was done by a machine. So this is an example of marketing automation. But technically, it is similar to, let's say, when you click a link and then you are transferred to some other page. So there is a rule. So it's kind of belongs to the marketing automation hemisphere. But you can also do much more advanced things. You can target based on behavior. Let's say you can send an email to customers who have been watching a certain product, but it's all rule-based. So marketing automation doesn't automate anything unless you have a specific rule that it follows, which is the key difference when we go into the AI and machine learning that we can also use in the back end to analyze customer data and make decisions based on data. So machine learning is basically a prediction machine. So based on the data that the machine has, it can predict what's the most common answer or decision. So it basically allows independent decision making by machines. So in marketing automation, the machines are not making any decisions. All the decisions are coded into this system, but machine learning can make predictions and do independent decisions that we're going to discuss a little bit more in a bit. Next, let's dive deeper into the artificial intelligence and machine learning in marketing. So, what is the definition for artificial intelligence? Again, there is no universally accepted definition, but here is one from one of the fathers of artificial intelligence, Alan Turing. It is the science of making computers do things that require intelligence when done by humans. So the long history that dates back to the 1950s has been that humans has been humans have been trying to create machines that mimic the intelligence by humans, so that they are able to solve problems and sort of think similarly to humans. And Alan Turing came up with a test a long time ago to sort of measure when have we reached true artificial intelligence. So, as said, the development of artificial intelligence dates back to decades and decades, and there have been ups and downs. But the Turing test was created to really measure when are we there, when have we really witnessed the artificial intelligence. And the test is rather simple. So there is a human questioner that is asking questions that are replied by both a computer and a human respondent. And the idea is that when the human questioner cannot make a difference between the response by a computer and a human, so that it cannot kind of select like which one is a computer and which one is human, then we have reached the true artificial intelligence. And I would argue that at the moment, we can really talk about true artificial intelligence because now when we create this test, perhaps we can still recognize which response is delivered by machine and which one is by human, because artificial intelligence usually has this specific style to respond to the questions. However, we cannot at least say that in some instances, yes, we can, but in most cases, we cannot say that, okay, this computer didn't quite understand my question and it's not really answering my question. So they probably have a different style to answer questions, but often they reply with better responses than humans do. So in that sense, I think we have reached the real artificial intelligence. I already mentioned about the difference between automation and AI, but to sort of maybe repeat and tell things in other terms. So the automation, again, it's about repeating tasks done by humans or automating the repetitive tasks. And it's this rule-based thing. So we must be able to specifically tell the automation system that if something happens, then what does the computer do? So we need to have these very specific codes and rules in place. And then again, AI systems, they can make these independent decisions which are based on predictions, which are based on the training data that the AI system has processed. So this allows us to teach machines do much more intelligent tasks. And this is related to something called Polanyi's paradox, when talking about what is the key advancement in the AI systems. So the Polanyi's paradox states that humans know more than they can tell. So we humans, we have a lot of knowledge that we cannot specifically explain, which is no, but we cannot maybe explain them properly, or at least at the level that the machine without AI system would be able to understand. So let me give you an easy example. So for example, we humans, when we see a cat, the animal, we can always say that that's clearly a cat. Then again, this is somewhat implicit knowledge. It is actually very difficult to then define what is a cat. And especially, it's very difficult to program or code to a computer to explain what is a cat because there are different types of cats and they are, different colors and slightly different shapes and so on. So it's actually something that is almost impossible to code to a computer. So when it comes to the automation, we cannot really use things like when you see a cat, then do something because the computer cannot understand that. Now, the big advance in AI systems is that we do not need to explicitly code everything. We don't need to specifically explain to the computer at the granular detail what is something. Instead, we can insert, let's say, 10,000 pictures of different types of cats. And then with these examples, the machine can learn what is a cat. So when we then deliver to the machine a set of pictures of different animals, it compares the animal pictures to the data set that it already has, these 10,000 pictures of cats, and then it can calculate the prediction of what's the likelihood of each animal being a cat. And that way it learns what is a cat. So we haven't specifically coded it, we have just trained it with different examples. And this is the key advance in the AI system. So we can use now machines for much more complex issues that we are not deliberately able to explain. Looking things a little bit broadly, the key drivers of recent AI development, so I'm talking about the last 10 to 20 years, what has really happened that has driven this AI development. So first of all, the proliferation of big data or digital data. So we are inserting or uploading more and more digital data to the internet all the time. We consumers, companies, organizations, we continuously interact with digital media and we create content like text, numbers, pictures, videos. And all of this data can be used as the training material of the AI system. So this is one important driver. In parallel, the computing power has increased at an exponential pace. So meaning that to be able to process all that digital data that it requ that is required for these training data sets, we need a lot of computing power. So that has also been one fundamental thing that our computers are now able to process pictures, videos, and sounds and all these types of things. So these are kind of like the mundane things. So there's increasing amount of digital data that can be used for training data sets or training the AI systems. And then there's the increasing amount of computing power that allows the AI systems to process that data. But the very key advance has been related to the sensors, especially algorithms, and then actuators. So these have been the very, very key essence of the recent AI development. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit more and try to give you an overview of what's been going on. So first of all, starting with the sensors. So the machines have now new sensors to sense the environment. So besides numbers, besides text, they are able to see, they are able to hear, they are sometimes even able to touch and smell things. So all of these things allow the computers to sense new types of information. And the very key thing has happened here. So the machine learning algorithms. So now the machines can make prediction-based recommendations and decisions via machine learning algorithms. So once it has sensed something, it can actually process the information and then make recommendations or decisions depending on the context. And finally, it is important to note that also the actuators have developed. So we have new interfaces for the machines to operate. So sometimes the machines can actuate decisions via text in a chatbot, but it can also be speech, it can be movement in robotics, and so on. So all of these things have allowed us to use machines in many different ways. Here is a brief illustration of what the machine learning algorithms and sensors are doing. So first of all, so let's imagine we are inside a self-driving car. So we can see that the machine has an ability for seeing different objects. So it can recognize what object is a person, what is a car, what is a traffic light. And based on this, on its machine learning algorithms, it is able to calculate the prediction. So I mentioned many times that AI is a prediction machine. So when it sees this object, it's continuously calculating the likelihood of this object to be a person, or another object to be a car, or this object to be a traffic light, and so on. So this is the predictions that it is making. Now, if it was a well-trained self-driving car, it should also be able to act to a decision. So when it sees a red traffic light, it should be able to stop. Or when it sees a person, it must make sure that it doesn't drive over a human being, and so on. But this is the basic logic. Hopefully, this illustrates a bit how the machine learning is working in the background in many different contexts. Here are some other examples, just illustrating that there are different use cases for AI, and they have different types of senses. So, for example, this Hilton robot concierge. You can, by the way, watch the video if you wish. Here are the links. But this Hilton robot concierge, it's able to sense speech. So when we speak to the robot, it senses the speech, and then the robot is connected to the cloud. So that's where the machine learning algorithms are working. So it's processing what you talk to the robot, and then based on its training data that it has access to, it comes up with the response that is relevant to your question or whatever you say to the robot. So that's how this kind of system works. On the right-hand side, you can see a video of Amazon Go. And again, the store, the basic idea of this kind of store is that you don't have to go to a cashier desk or anything like that. So you can just pick up products and walk out, and that's it. And how it works, the store has been equipped with a lot of sensors and cameras, so it can see what kind of products you pick up from the shelf, and then it can perceive which products you return. And it continuously know what kind of items you have taken from the shelf. So what do you have in your shopping cart or whatnot? And then when you walk out, it has the ability to know what the prices are. So it will charge your credit card and send you a receipt. But again, it's fully based on AI, how it kind of knows what you have taken from the shelf and how it charges you. So just a couple of examples. Let's go a little bit deeper into, not too deep, but a little bit deeper to machine learning. And often the different machine learning types are divided in three modes of learning. So first of all, there's the supervised learning, which is the most common, which is related to the cat example I mentioned earlier. The machine learns to identify and classify objects via labeled training data. So you have the training data, and then based on the training data, the machine learns what is what. Then you have the unsupervised learning, where you don't necessarily have any labels. So this is a cat and this is a dog, but it can still learn patterns from unlabeled training data. So let's say you give the machine all your customer data, then it can learn patterns. And thirdly, the reinforcement learning, where the machine learns to optimize actions against goals and metrics. So theoretically, you could say that you can do anything in your power to maximize sales, for example. And then it tries to do anything in its power to maximize sales, which can be dangerous, but theoretically, that's how it works. And I have one example for each. So here is a marketing use case for supervised learning. So first of all, you train the AI system with data on all potential customers that have filled in a form to contact sales. So let's say you have a lot of visitors on your website, and then one segment of those visitors will contact sales. So they fill in some information about themselves. So now the machine can get the training data of whatever you fill into the contact form, but also probably actions that took place before that. Then the second part of the training data is the resulting outcomes. So you can label based on your historical data that, okay, these potential customers actually were converted into a customer, and this other group, they were not converted into a customer. So now the AI system has all potential customers, and then they're classified into these two groups. So after that, the machine detects the characteristics of the converted and unconverted customers. So who do they Who are what are these like, the converted customers and unconverted customers? And then it starts classifying new contact requests. So whenever there is a new request, a contact into the sales, so it can start classify these into hot or cold lead, sales leads, which is also called lead scoring. So again, it learns via examples, and then it makes a prediction. So it could be more granular than hot or cold, something like, okay, this particular sales request has a 90% chance of becoming a customer, and this other customer has only a 10%. So it's basically a very good way to prioritize the sales leads that you have so that the sales people can focus on the most likely customers. So this could be one use case with supervised learning. An example of unsupervised learning could be something like this. So you can ask the machine to create clusters of similar customers, clusters or segments, based on selected data you have from your customers. So maybe you have a nice data set of different purchase criteria of all your customers, and then you can ask the machine to classify this. Basically, we can do this with statistics, but this might streamline your process. So you could create segmentation with AI, at least theoretically. It's very important that you think, if you just insert all the data that you have about your customers, then it might focus on wrong things. But you have to be sort of careful with the data set that you insert. So things like, let's say, name and address probably doesn't have a very, very important role there, or a phone number or something like that. So perhaps you wouldn't like to insert that kind of data. And then once you have your segmentation, you would start asking questions like which segments produce the highest share of revenue, which clusters are most profitable, so which clusters should we maybe focus on in the future, and so on. So this could be another use case, and this time with unsupervised learning. Finally, here is the example of reinforcement learning. So here you can set a specific goal for the machine. For example, maximize ad clicks. And then the machine uses all the means in its power to reach the goal. The machine learns via trial and error what works. And this is roughly how social media feeds, search engines, and personalization algorithms work. So think of Facebook, for example. So you think about the news feed, like what kind of stuff you have in front of you. It's largely based on this type of reinforcement learning. So Facebook or Meta has learned what kind of things you're interested in. So in my case, it might, for example, realize that, okay, I'm more interested in ice hockey than let's say figure skating. So it is exposing me with or I'm getting exposed to a lot of ice hockey related content rather than figure skating, which is perhaps pretty good for me. So I get more relevant content, but this is also quite dangerous in many other cases. So ice hockey doesn't really matter to anyone, but think about politics, for example. So once the AI system kind of recognizes that you belong to the left-wing party, or let's say you are a fan of left-wing party or the r very right wing party, then it can start start sharing content for you. I mean, the algorithm work can work so that, let's say, you are the right-wing member, so you are only exposed to opinions by the right-wing people. Or if you're the left-wing candidate or left-wing promoter, then you get only you're only exposed to the left-wing content. And what this does, it polarizes the society. And in politics, is, for example, this is very dangerous. So we should always, in politics and when we talk about society, find consensus rather than getting further and further away from each other. So when we only hear the part of the story that we kind of think is right, then we get all the time further and further away from finding a balance or consensus with other people. So in politics, this can be very, very dangerous. Maybe similar thing, maybe religions or at least one thing that come to my mind is COVID 19, and at those days we had very strong promoters of vaccines. So some people very much in favor of the vaccines, that we should get the vaccines. And then there was this other group that were very much against the vaccines. And you could clearly see in the discussion that both of these groups had been exposed to very different type of content and facts. So both groups were talking about facts, but their facts were very different. And I'm not saying it was only because of social media or anything like that, but you could clearly see that the in favor of vaccines people and against vaccine people were very far away from each other. And in these types of instances, these personalization algorithms can be very dangerous. Which leads us to some of the ethical concerns in the use of AI. So there are numerous ethical issues that have been discussed in the society. Here are a few. So privacy and surveillance. So AI can be used to collect and analyze vast amounts of data, which can raise concerns about privacy and surveillance. So for example, let's say social media platforms are often accused of violating our privacy and things like that. Chinese government is claimed to monitor the citizens with AI and create these citizen scores. I don't know if all of that is true, but at least that's what's being said. Then bias and discrimination. The AI systems can amplify biases and discrimination, particularly when they are trained on biased data. This leads to the question of who's accountable for the decisions made by AI systems. So this has been one of the big societal issues, that when we now just give the work to the AI systems, they might be biased based on the training data, and it's difficult to then correct those biases. Identity theft. AI can be used to create digital replicas of real people, which can be used for malicious purposes such as fraud or identity theft. Think of deepfake videos, for example, and have one example in a bit. But this is one famous example of what can go wrong with the AI systems. It's an old case from 2016. So this was the early development of the AI chatbots done by Twitter. So Twitter thought Microsoft's AI chatbot to be a racist asshole in less than a day. So the machine was programmed so that it sort of adapts to human conversation and start. It is trying to sort of understand what customer what the users of the chatbot really want to talk about and so on. So it started with humans are super cool, and in less than a day it had adapted its opinions to hating feminists and Jews and so on. So this was a very, very ugly case, but of course this is already a very long very old case, and things have developed a lot, but it already kind of illustrated that if we do not supervise these AI systems well, things can go awfully wrong. The deepfake videos have become very prominent these days. They're associated with a lot of fraud, so people are made to believe that someone said something, even though that someone had not done it. It was just a deep fake video. It has been used as a weapon in wars already, but a lot of frauds. And I think this is one of the most terrifying things in AI, that we are already very used to the idea that we get a lot of spam emails and these, which are at least for most people quite easy to detect. But it's no longer so that we cannot trust to emails and maybe textual information, but in the future we cannot also rely on any digital content, so be that a video or picture or whatever, it might have been manipulated. And especially these videos, they look real, and this is just one example. You can search for many other examples online if you're willing. But I think this is somewhat scary, that it's difficult as we use more and more digital media, and then we cannot really trust any of it. It's terrifying. Already mentioned the Polanyi's paradox earlier, so the humans know more than they can tell, but related to these ethical discussions. So if this Polanyi's paradox is one of these great advances, that now we can actually teach things to the machines that we are not able to tell exactly. But the reversed Polanyi's paradox is what creates many of these ethical problems. So machines do more than they can tell. So we can insert training data, and we can expose the AI system to new data continuously, and then it can calculate the prediction. But there is this big black box in between, that how does the AI system actually make that prediction? So this is one important issue, for example, related to discrimination. So there's been a lot of news on an AI system to discriminate based on a race or gender, let's say in employment situations or recruitment situations, or who gets a loan from the bank, or even in criminal justice and these types of things. So the trouble is that machine is not often able to tell why it comes up with the certain predictions. So there is the big black box. As a simple example, you can ask anything from the ChatGPT or any AI system, and then ask, like, why did you come up with such a response? And they are often quite reluctant to answer, or they cannot answer it clearly. So I asked ChatGPT, how would you define digital marketing? And it gave me a definition. And then I just asked, like, why did you end up with such a definition? So basically, well, why do you think this is a good definition for digital marketing? And the response is here: as an AI language model, my definition of digital marketing is based on my training data and blah, 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 blah. So basically, no response. So it cannot really explain why it thinks that this is the best response for my query. So this is just important to think, and I think it's not reasonable to assume that the AI systems have biases in themselves. Maybe there is a case that I cannot think, but it's usually not the system, it's the training data where the biases emerge from. So if you insert the AI system with biased data, let's say you have always recruited white males, and this is your training data, so obviously the AI system will look for similar characteristics when it makes these recommendations who to recruit. So if all your training data is full of white males, it will recognize that you want to recruit white males. So there'll be the bias in it. So these are just and basically it comes down from the marketer's perspective, that you have to be very careful what data do you insert. Why would you need to insert data on race or gender when you want to recruit people? So what are the real characteristics that you are looking for? Hoping that you found the session meaningful. And you can identify the key advances in technological development. We discuss the front-end technology as well as the back-end technologies and some of the implications for digital marketing. And then hopefully you got the basic idea of how AI systems and machine learning work, and also mention some of the use cases in marketing. And hopefully you can build on those things. Have a great day, and thanks for joining.